Welcome to a Cult of Our Lives minisode. I am Hallie George, sans Stassi. As you know, we're having a little bit of an opposite sides of the Atlantic Ocean problem. So today it's going to be Rosencrantz without Guildenstern. We stopped so many duos and now I can't think of anything on the spot. Anyway, to put an end to what I'm sure was going to be a very rambling and strangely referential line of thinking, today I am going to be talking on my own about Rick Ross, the famous cult programmer, and about the work he's done, and whether it's good, bad, or a mix of both, because he is a flawed human being, just like all of us. So let's start out with talking a little bit about the man himself. Rick Ross was born Rick Allen Ross in 1952. And he is known as what is called a cult deprogrammer. A cult deprogrammer, as the name sounds, is someone who removes somebody from a cult at the behest of their family or friends and sort of beats the belief out of them. Ross was inspired to go down this path in 1982 when he learned that there had been fringe group missionaries at his grandmother's nursing home, and they were targeting elderly residents. They told them they were going to burn in hell if they didn't convert from Judaism to Messianic Judaism. He was outraged by this. He brought it to the home's director, and they campaigned and got the group's activity stopped. This sort of whet his appetite for stopping religious organizations from bringing people into their group. He worked for a while for the Jewish Family and Children's Services in Phoenix, Arizona, which was sort of helping people with their advocating for religious rights, providing education regarding hate groups and cults. He discovered that prisoners were a prime target for cult groups, as a lot of us know, especially when we talked about the Symbionese Liberation Army, which started as the result of someone who was in prison. And he sort of started to pick out patterns, as we have, as how everyone who's interested in cults have, as to what brings somebody into a cult. We've talked about this. It's usually a charismatic leader. There's a process you have to go through. You are faced with death or violence or threats if you try to leave. A lot of your money goes to the group. You know all this. We've talked about this. So he became very involved in figuring out what causes a cult and what brings somebody into a cult. He left the JFCS in 1986, so about 4 years after he'd become interested in this, to become a full-time cult consultant and deprogrammer. He worked for the Cult Awareness Network, which we've talked about in the past, and he was involved after the Waco siege in trying to deprogram some of the Branch Davidian members. He became famous and was featured on the CBS television program 48 Hours for the work he did deprogramming a 14-year-old boy whose name, I am not kidding you, was Aaron Perrin. He did bring controversy in both his methods and in the Jason Scott deprogramming case. Now, when you think of forcible deprogramming, the word forcible sticks out at you, as it should. It's not a good word. It usually doesn't mean I forcibly got somebody an ice cream cone. And even that is weird. That just don't force people to do things, okay? What happened when he did forcible deprogrammings was that a relative or concerned friend would pay him. He would kidnap the person who was about to be deprogrammed, tie them up, and basically berate them until he had talked them out of their ideas. So he faced unlawful imprisonment charges for one of these incidents known as the Jason Scott case. In January of 1991, Jason Scott was an 18-year-old boy who was living in Bellevue, Washington, and he was a member of the Life Tabernacle Church, which was a Pentecostal church, affiliated with them. His mother, Catherine Tonkin, had been a member of the church. All of her children were, but she had withdrawn from it because she believed that there was a pastor in the church who had behaved inappropriately towards one of her sons. Not Jason, but one of her younger children. Jason and the two younger sons disagreed with her decision to remove herself from the church. They left her home. She called the Cult Awareness Network. A woman named Shirley Landa, who is a contact person at CAN, referred her to Rick Ross, who decided he was going to facilitate the deprogramming of Jason. Ross picked up a two-man security team and traveled to the grandmother's house where two of the younger sons were staying. They locked them in the basement, argued at them, lectured them, and they gave up their Pentecostal beliefs. Jason was a different story because Jason was legally an adult. Ross demanded a bigger fee because he said he was powerfully built and it increased the risk of him being harmed in his effort to deprogram him. Ross actually hired a karate black belt named Clark Rottroff to help him with this operation in case anyone needs to be karate chopped. I have a friend from childhood who is a black belt in karate, those people can kill you. So on the evening, Scott returned to his grandmother's residence where he was staying. Ross and his associates jumped out at him, wrestled him to the ground, and threw him into a van. So everything's really on the up and up so far. They tied him up with rope and duct tape. They drove him to a cottage on the beach and walked him into the house, handcuffed him, basically tied him up with like several different devices to make sure he couldn't escape, and two of the men guarded any of the doors in which he could get out of. Scott demanded that he wanted to leave and that this was a violation of his rights, which it was. Ross refused, said that he was just doing what he was being paid to do. So Ross kind of went Nuremberg defense on this. He was just following orders. He then subjected Scott to 5 days of derogatory comments about his church, his pastor, himself, his girlfriend, his friends within the church. He talked about how Christianity, conservative Christianity, Protestantism was all wrong. He was forced to watch videos on other cults, told that it was the same thing, basically what was happening to him. And he said that he was not let out of anyone's sight 24 hours a day. Every time he went to the bathroom, at least 2 other people would come with him. They would argue and lecture him. Whenever he tried to speak back, Ross would hit him or tap him. So Scott, after 4 days, came up with a plan, as I think many people would, where he decided to pretend he had changed his mind. He said that he was full of remorse, that he would give up this Pentecostal thing. Rick Ross was pleased with this. He assumed he had won. He suggested they all go and meet up with Scott's family, with his mom and his 2 brothers, to have a celebratory dinner. When they were at the restaurant, Scott excused himself to the bathroom, climbed out the window, called the police. The police arrested Ross and his companions for unlawful imprisonment. Eventually, these charges were brought to court almost 2 years later in 1993. Ross argued that he had been hired to do a job and that he had not been the one who physically restrained Scott, so it was not his fault. He had done nothing wrong. He was proven innocent on that count. Mark Workman and Charles Simpson, who were 2 of the other men besides the karate expert who were with him, pleaded guilty to coercion because they had been the ones who had physically been tying Scott up. They were sentenced to 1-year jail terms each, but all but 30 days of that was suspended, so they only had to go to jail for 30 days. Clark testified for the prosecution and was not charged. Then came the civil suit. The civil suit was filed against Ross, as well as the Cult Awareness Network, by a man named Kendrick Moxon, who is a longtime member and a lawyer for, you guessed it, the big one, the Church of Scientology. And he did it on behalf of Jason Scott, because there is nothing that makes you look less like you belong to a cult than by defending someone else who is in a cult. Moxon claimed that he had violated Scott's civil rights, which is the right to practice and believe in the religion of his choice, free from force, violence, threats, retaliation, or intimidation. Ross's lawyer kept defending that since Scott was powerfully built, it made sense to bring along others to tie him up for security. Which, again, I don't know why they keep saying powerfully built. He was 18 years old. I don't think he was some sort of monster. The descriptions of being hit, of being tied up, of being followed everywhere did affect the jury. They awarded about $800,000 to Jason Scott and about $1 million in punitive damages against the Cult Awareness Network, $2.5 million against Ross, and $250,000 against his co-defendants. The court found that CAN volunteers routinely referred callers to deprogrammers, which is sort of interesting because it feels like a really big step to jump to if you call and you say, hey, I feel like my friend, my sister, my mom is stuck in this insane, dangerous situation, and their first instinct is to get someone to kidnap them. I feel it's kind of like going to an intervention, and the second they walk in, hitting them on the head, tying them to a radiator, and saying, now you can't drink for 21 days. In my opinion, Ross was not in the right either. I'm not agreeing with the Scientologists, but I just thought it was sort of an interesting story and an interesting approach to take, because when you think of a cult deprogrammer, it's positive. It's a positive thing to sort of think of someone who's like, oh, this person is trying to get someone out of a dangerous and destructive situation, but the way they do it is in itself incredibly cruel and kind of crank it all the way up to 11 before they even need to. The aftermath of this is that Jason Scott eventually did repent. He became close with his mother again, with the rest of his family. This case itself brought the demise of the original cult's awareness network because they had lost so much money in the civil case and that they had sort of become known for being a violent alternative. Like, they had lost the idea that they were trying to help people so much as threaten and intimidate them to the same level, if not more, than the cults that they were in. According to a religious scholar named J. Gordon Melton, which, you know, sounds like a religious scholar, he said that the Scott case virtually brought deprogramming to a halt in this country. What this judgment does is to cut the communication lines that allow deprogramming to go forward, which is why you don't hear of a lot of this stuff being done today, because it was considered brutality. To talk about Rick Ross today, he has handled almost 400 deprogramming cases in various countries, not just America, and has been an expert witness in several cases. He self-published a book 3 years ago in 2014 called Cults Inside Out. It was published in China and Italy and Hong Kong, and he's still considered to be someone who knows a lot about cults, which I think is a fair assessment. I believe that he knows tremendously, probably more than anybody, what the signs of a cult are, but I don't believe that he handled it well, what he knew. I don't think he took the appropriate or reasonable steps to help people who were in cults. I feel like he just went at it with the same level of intensity that anyone else did. But, you know, I know there are people who think that you have to go at these people, fight crazy with crazy, or you're not going to get anything done. I know I certainly feel that about the current political climate in our country, is that if you try to be calm and the other people are being lunatics, nothing's going to get done. So I'm interested to hear what any of you have to think. We would love to hear from you at cultsofourlives@gmail.com. Stassi and I will be reuniting to record some more episodes pretty soon. And we're definitely going to be reading a lot of these. So if you have any opinions, do you think he was in the right? Do you think it was an overreaction? Do you think that the Cult Awareness Network should still be referring people to cult deprogrammers at the level which they are? Or do you think no? Do you have something else you want to say? Do you think I'm annoying? Do you think the sky is blue? Do you still watch Doctor Who? How's that going? I haven't in a while, but I keep being reminded because I'm in England. Let me know. So cultsofourlives@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Hallie Regina. And for my recommendation today, I recently saw Moonlight. I loved it. I don't know if I've talked about that on here before. I thought it was beautiful. I thought it was gorgeous visually. I thought it was such a simple and powerful story. I fully think it deserved the Oscar that it won. So go see Moonlight, email us, live your lives, and I can't wait to talk to you guys again soon. Be excellent to each other.